Oh boy, week five gave us everything we wanted and more. Notre Dame hangs on over Duke. Texas blows out Kansas. Ole Miss and LSU forget to bring defense to the yard. Trey, I think we've got to apologize, at least in some parts, to Lane Kiffin. All of that and more right here on the Three Technique, week five.
One man. Goodbye. Hello, Heisman. 20, 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 45. There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game.
They get it to Rogers. They get it back now to the 30. They're down to the 20. Paul Levine is out on the field. He's going to go into the end zone.
Four-man Alabama rush. Got him.
Oh, no, they didn't. Oh, my gracious.
Yep.
How about that?
Welcome one, welcome all to the Three Technique live show, week five reactions. Guys, we separate some contenders from some absolute pretenders this week. And I'm excited to dive into all of this. Of course, Garrett Turney, Trey Reeves joining me. Fellas, glad to be back with you. Thank you for holding it down, not sinking the ship on Wednesday night. The Wednesday preview was a lot of fun. And I tell you what, y'all had some takes. We got to pay the bills today a little bit on some of those. We'll get to all of those coming up. Trey, you are joining us from what looks like a linen closet. Explain to the folks who are listening on the podcast where exactly you are right now.
I am inside a converted linen closet. It actually has a bed in here as well. I'll tilt my camera.
He tilts the camera and it unplugs the mic. You're still muted, bud. we'll let Trey get sorted out. He'll come back in a second. Garrett, you're at home. You've got stable internet connection. You've got everything connected as well. A little under the weather, but I tweeted out you're pounding hot tea and lemons.
Yeah, we're doing what we can over here. Maybe not, you know, needing as much help as Trey needs. And there he goes. Trey Reeves, everybody. Anyways, yeah, so what an interesting start. Hey, this just goes with what week five was. Week five was interesting. So many things that we've got to, I think, cover and talk about. A lot of miscues from a lot of teams early on. Miscues from our team pretty early on. So we'll get all that straightened out. Hopefully we can straighten our stuff out. Kind of like Georgia did, maybe a little bit less like, you know, someone like LSU did.
Oh my goodness. That was, we nearly had the SEC turned absolutely upside down on its head. Trey may be rejoining us here. Trey, come in. Do we have you?
He's back.
I'm here.
Okay, officially back. Please don't show anybody you're caught. We can't afford that right now.
I gotta defend myself here for a second. It is a very nice place that I am at this weekend. I'm just in a quiet corner of said nice place. So don't worry about me. I'm fine. I got to watch a lot of football this weekend. It's all good.
There you go. Yeah, this is the perk, sometimes the drawback, I guess, of doing a live show. So if you're listening on the podcast on Monday morning and you're going, what on earth is happening? You need to be joining us on YouTube on Saturday nights for our live reaction show. We do this every Saturday night. We'll recap the week and give our breakdowns. And in some cases, we have to issue formalized apologies. That's coming up. I do want to let you know, we're presented by the Transfer Portal CFB, one of the best partners in college football. You've heard the spiel. They do tremendous work powered by No Context College Football, covering all things our beautiful, messy, wonderful game, and tweeting out a lot of gems as well. Also, shout out to Homefield, who, tell you what, some of their matchups of the week, once again, delivering the Texas A&M Arkansas t-shirt matchup was a beauty. Garrett, I can't tell if your collection continues to grow or not, but please tell us about Homefield and your love for them.
Hey, we're just rotating shirts in the back. I have a policy where I only throw like winners if I have the choice. And so we're only throwing winners this week. Don't think about the hoodie. I forgot to take that one down. We don't want to talk about Georgia Tech. That doesn't refer to Georgia Tech jackets. That's the Arlington Heights High School yellow jackets. That's what that is. Anyways, but no, we got Michigan behind us. Baylor Bears got SMU, who I think are currently still playing. Or maybe they just went final. I didn't see a final on that one.
West Virginia just won.
Yeah, Texas A&M. And then the Tulane Green Wave picking up a big win this day too. So, yeah, we're pretty excited about it. We love home field. We'll see who the winners are next week.
That's right. 3Tech Pod gets you 15% off your first purchase over there. If you've already purchased from them, either use a different email or you can head on over to our Twitter. We've got a link there as well. It'll get you the same discount. Guys, you had three big games on Wednesday night. Two of them delivered in spades and oh so much more. You have Notre Dame holding off Duke that will lead off with 21-14. Texas blows out Kansas. Kansas didn't have Jalen Daniels play in this one. Jason, the mean green lean bean machine, plays, and Kansas offense went absolutely nowhere. And then Ole Miss and LSU did not leave you wanting for points. A 55-49 win for Ole Miss. Trey, we'll get there in a moment, but I'll let you lead off here with Notre Dame and Duke. This was a defensive game. It felt like it was going to go much the same way that last week did for Notre Dame and Ohio State. And yet Notre Dame's able to drive the length of the field, convert a 4th-and-17 when Sam Hartman took off. They're able to get in the end zone. Audric Estime wins the ball game. Riley Leonard goes down on the final play with a nasty-looking ankle injury. Kind of diagnose this game. What'd you like from Notre Dame, and did you feel like Duke gave this one away?
I don't know that Duke gave it away as much as Notre Dame just came out and took it. And they did exactly, you know, what happened to them in reverse last week up in Columbus, Ohio. Garrett and I highlighted one of the things that made Ohio State stay on top in that game was they prevented the big one from Audric Estime. They still allowed 5 yards of carry to Audric Estime, but they didn't allow him to get the backbreaker that really, you know, sunk the team. So listen, I am really impressed with both of these teams. I think we coming in knew this was going to be a really fun defensive struggle. I expected a few more points to be put up by both of these offenses, but you know, both of these defenses are so good, it's hard to blame the offenses for struggling at times. But you know, two turnovers from Duke, the backbreaker at the end from Estime, that's kind of exactly what we highlighted on the preview show. If you look back to what we were saying on Wednesday, that the quarterback that made the fewer mistakes was going to win the game. And if Duke's able to, you know, if Riley Leonard's able to be that quarterback and they're able to prevent Audric Estime from getting the big one, they'll win the football game. But unfortunately for Duke, neither of those things were true. So kudos to Notre Dame, big environment. That crowd was jacked up. It's the biggest game in the history of the Duke football program, the biggest home game, I'm sure. And they go into a hostile environment and get the job done. That's what championship caliber teams do. So hats off to Duke for competing. Bigger hats off to Notre Dame for getting it done and, you know, finishing that game strong.
The rushing yards very, very, very close in this one. Duke actually outrushes Notre Dame 189-159. Riley Leonard did a tremendous part of that on the ground. I tweeted in that fourth quarter, it felt like every play was just Riley Leonard running with his legs, a QB draw, because they couldn't pass. Duke had nothing going through the air. I feel like this game came down to the 4th-and-6 with just 3 minutes left in the ball game. Duke has a chance to ice it away, either to kick the field goal or convert the first down and keep the drive alive. And instead, they back Riley Leonard up to pooch punt it. Now, it was all on the defense at that point. And listen, your defense has been great all game. I don't necessarily hate the call, but in retrospect, not taking control of that game yourself maybe looks like a little bit of a misstep. Garrett, what do you think Duke will regret more? Not going for it on 4th-and-6 or not spying Sam Hartman, allowing him to run for a 4th-and-17 late in that game?
I think it's going to be not going for it. My entire take on that was you have to play to win the game when you're in these big spots. This is your chance to beat a second top team of the year, put yourself, you know, kind of in control of your own destiny, really make a statement in front of the whole nation, and you decide to let Notre Dame make the play, right? Nobody's going to blame you for not spying Sam Hartman. Nobody thinks that he's necessarily a dual threat freak or, you know, oh, you got to have a spy or, you know, especially on what was it, 4th-and-16? I mean, that was... You're not thinking that the quarterback's going to pick this thing up. You're thinking that this is going to be something you got to drop coverage. So I don't want to, you know, armchair quarterback the coverage that they run there. I don't want to armchair quarterback the defense they roll out in. However, I do think that you have to think about the going for it, right? You have to think about, do you go for it? You can run the football. That's kind of what you build your offense around. Do you want to trust that? Or do you want to say, hey, you know, let's just give that guy a chance and do that. I think you have to put the ball in your own hands, give yourself a chance to win. And you know, they're going to be rethinking that one a little bit. I don't think that's fair, but you do have to probably rethink it a little bit at this point.
Listen, Duke was not supposed to be in this position, right? Nobody expected them to be undefeated coming into today's ball game, or at least not many people expected that. Not many people expected them to fully hang with Notre Dame, keep Sam Hartman in check, and have a chance to win this game. And yet that's where we found the Blue Devils late in the fourth quarter with the destiny in their hands. Florida State has showed some warts, right? On defense, they don't have a rushing attack. Clemson looked a little bit better, but I don't know that anyone is fully buying back Clemson stock. So if Riley Leonard is able to return, and we have no idea what his injury is right now, I haven't seen anything. If anyone on YouTube has, please drop that in the chat. Let us know. If Leonard's able to return, is Duke still considered an ACC front runner and a team that you can expect to see in the championship game, or was this a little bit of a reality check?
I think they're absolutely still a front runner. They're definitely in the top tier at the very least. I think Florida State's kind of in a tier by themselves. Maybe Miami would argue that right now, but I mean, they already beat Clemson. That's not a giant that they have to slay later in the year. You might say Clemson ends up being the better team, but I mean, they already beat Clemson, so it doesn't really matter, you know, when you're talking about who gets to go to the ACC championship game. So I think a couple other teams might have a reality check on them this weekend. Louisville was kind of fighting in the being that tier. They looked a little weak on Friday night with a tough NC State defense. NC State, speaking of, already has a couple of losses. Andrew in the chat says it is a reality check. I could see why you would say that. That is, you know, a very elite team, and it might be, you know, we're not talking about Duke as a college football playoff contender, and I think Notre Dame is definitely still in the college football playoff conversation. We're talking about the ACC title here. So for the last decade, the second team in the ACC title game has been nowhere near the college football playoff conversation. So I think, you know, that reality is still very much ahead of them. They have the games on the schedule that they can take care of business and get there. But, you know, any potential dark horse run to the college football playoff is probably over.
Yeah, I don't think this is as much of a reality check. It's a reality check for your offense, I think, that you have to be more effective across the board. You have to do a better job to, you know, get your offense rolling when you don't have everything going perfectly on the ground. But I don't think it's so much of a reality check for them in the ACC, right? In the ACC, I don't think there's that many great teams. I think obviously Florida State, and then it's a gap. And, you know, Trey, you said Miami, that could be an option. I know we're all, you know, Louisville looked okay. You know, NC State played well. You there's certain teams that you can maybe see making a run. Clemson's still not out of it, I guess. But, you know, I think Duke still, you have to say that with the tiebreaker over Clemson and with the fact that I think they're just playing better football, if Riley Leonard is able to play, I think that they're still in, not necessarily in, you know, the driver's seat or, you know, in full control, but they're definitely in contention for the ACC.
I'm really curious to see what happens with Riley Leonard. I mean, that guy is such a gamer. He's what college football represents. He's one of the best things about this sport. I will say Sam Hartman, good guy, Sam, he waited for several minutes outside the Duke injury tent, waiting for Riley Leonard to come out. Now he did come out on crutches. So whether that is, you know, a fracture, a sprain, a strain, we don't know. I'm not going to speculate on a college injury, but it is in all likelihood something that Duke is going to have to deal with, you know, going forward. And it was really cool to see Sam, a big win on the road, an escape. He should be celebrating with his team. Most quarterbacks would be celebrating with their team, and he's waiting outside the injury tent to talk with Riley and make sure he's okay. So really, really nice move by Sam, and Notre Dame escapes. Their postseason hopes certainly still alive. Let's move to number three, Texas. They blow out number 24, Kansas, 40-14. I think there was a comment in the chat just a minute ago that was praising Texas's defense. Their defense was really good today. Certainly not the story of the day. That's going to be the 661 total yards of offense. As we talked about off the top, Jalen Daniels did not play. It did show. Jason Bean is a good quarterback, no doubt about it. He's thrown for over 3,000 yards in his collegiate career, both at UNT and then at Kansas. But today he did not have what it took to beat the Texas Longhorns. They hung around a little bit, hung around in that first half, but Quinn Ewers has another solid performance. And Trey, Texas got whatever they wanted on the ground. We talked about this in the season preview for Texas, and both of you were a little hesitant that Bijan would not be able to be replaced so easily. They haven't replaced his consistent large numbers, but boy, today I think showed you what they have in that backfield with Jonathan Brooks. You had Cedric Baxter cleaning up as well, but Brooks has the monster day.
Yeah, Jonathan Brooks definitely cemented himself as the lead bell cow back in this offense this week. I think he'd had a couple good games leading up to this, but this was his true breakout. 21 carries, 218 yards, and two touchdowns. And, you know, again, when we were highlighting this game on Wednesday, we said for Texas to control this game, their path to the cover was to figure out the running game, right? Figure out, take some pressure off of Quinn, not make him do everything with his arm. They had averaged under 4 yards a carry in three out of their four contests leading up to this game. So big win for them to be able to figure that out. Looks like they have a bell cow back. I know that Sarkisian would probably prefer to have a guy that he can give the majority of the carries to and just be the guy. And Jonathan Brooks looks to be that guy. Now, the main cause for the concern, the final score looks fantastic, right, for Texas. But we're texting each other in the third quarter, and things aren't looking great for the Longhorns in the third quarter. This game is still very much in doubt in the third quarter. Whatever you want to read into it, that's fine. That's just kind of how Texas has played ball this year. They've played close to opponents for three quarters, and then they really separate themselves. The talent starts to show in the fourth quarter when you're thinking about the Rice game, the Wyoming game, this game against Kansas. So kudos to them for net cracking there at the end, but they're going to have to start faster. You know, that's my one nitpick with Texas right now. Got to figure out how to start fast. It gets real next week against Oklahoma. And if they're not starting fast in that one, they might not be able to get off to as much of a turnaround as quickly.
I do wonder, you know, Texas has a vastly more explosive offense than a team like Georgia, which we'll talk about in just a minute, right? And so the slow starts don't necessarily concern me quite as much. For Georgia, I wonder where they're going to consistently get their offense, and boy, it almost cost them against Auburn today. Our friend Sam Kahn Jr. over at The Athletic wrote an article after this game kind of addressing this specific concern and saying, look, Texas isn't perfect, but when you look at what they do well, they can run the football. Quinn does not turn it over. He threw his first interception of the entire season today, and it was a sloppy one. Definitely cost them points there at the end of the first half. But as a whole, Quinn is making smart decisions. They have the superior playmakers out wide in the vast majority of their matchups. And this defense is absolutely for real. They are flying to the football. They're physical. They snuff out your deep passing game. To me, Texas separates themselves a little bit from the likes of Georgia. And I'm going to ask a very hard question about Georgia coming up. Spoiler alert. But Texas, to me, has all the ingredients to where they may not start perfect. They may not look like a vintage Nick Saban team where they crush all hope in the first 3 minutes of the ballgame. But guys, the more I watch Texas, the more I watch them go about and win games in different ways, right? We've watched them win it through the air. Today, we watched them win it on the ground. I'm really believing that this Texas team is for real. And, you know, we've got a couple of comments in the chat as well. Texas against Oklahoma, the ultimate litmus test is next week in the Red River rivalry. Early line, I saw thrown around maybe 3.5. I would take the Longhorns in that bet right there. So I'm a believer in Texas. Garrett, where do you net out here on the Longhorns?
I mean, I think the Longhorns are playing real good football. I think for me, I don't think they put a full game together. I think they put some really good moments together. I think they've done a lot of good things and, you know, found ways to win, but I don't think they've put a full game together. And I think that's the scary part for everybody else is the fact that they haven't put a full game together and they still won all their games and been pretty convincing in most of them. So I think that's the thing you have to acknowledge is even though they haven't put together their best effort, they still have looked really, really good. And, you know, are they going to be without fast starts? Could they find themselves down next week to Oklahoma? Could they find themselves in a position where, you know, they're looking up at some people going home through the end of the season? Yeah, sure. But like, I still think this is a team that can climb back, that can fight back from that. I'm curious to see what happens if they don't start to do that, start to get down, don't really find it, but we just haven't seen it happen for them yet. So I think until they do that, you have to say it's a pretty good squad. And, you know, even though I haven't necessarily been convinced by the quality win that they've had, I don't think Bama's necessarily all that good this year. So, you know, I think that it's a good win on the road. It's not as good as maybe a Bama win would be previous years. I still think this is a really good squad.
Very curious to see what Texas does against Oklahoma. The last two undefeated teams left in the Big 12. John letting us know Texas currently favored at 4.5 on DraftKings. We'll talk about Oklahoma in just a second. I guess when we get down to the Big 12, they put up gargantuan numbers on an Iowa State defense that typically is really, really solid. They were not so much today. So we'll talk Sooners here in just a little bit. Our final big game of the weekend was, boy, a barn burner in the SEC. Number 20, Ole Miss, holds on at home 55-49 over the 13th-ranked LSU Tigers. Ole Miss had 21 points in the first quarter and in the fourth quarter to upset the Tigers at home. It was kind of in the middle where it felt like your typical ho-hum Ole Miss underperformance against a big team. And yet, coming into this game, there was a very real storyline, Trey, where Lane Kiffin had yet to really have a legacy win, a program-defining win in a game that counted. And Brian Kelly still has that moniker that he just can't win the big game. Now, Garrett, if you'll bring it back on over to Trey here, we don't have the blue curtain a la Tiger Woods, but Mr. Reeves, is there anything you'd like to say to the Ole Miss faithful?
Listen, I am sorry, Ole Miss fans, that I forgot you're playing against Brian Kelly this week, because I should have remembered that. Oh, yes, bring it up full screen. Look, Lane Kiffin got a great win tonight. I'm all jokes aside, he got a fantastic win tonight. I'm sorry I doubted you, Lane, but I think you'd had a better strategy this week. I think you stayed off of Twitter. You kept your thoughts to yourself about who's calling the defensive plays on the other side of the football. And you came in with a good game plan. Your team didn't fold. Congratulations. Great win. I know they're having fun in Oxford, Mississippi tonight. But again, I apologize for forgetting that you were playing against Brian Kelly and not factoring that into the equation in this one.
I thought you were going to go with the Conor McGregor. I apologize to absolutely
No. I do apologize because, you know, it is a big deal for Lane Kiffin to get a signature win. It's the first time he's knocked off either LSU or Alabama, I believe, unless I'm forgetting a win against LSU while they were down. But it's a big, big deal for Ole Miss, and it just throws the SEC West into absolute chaos. Because we were sitting here this time last week thinking that LSU was in the driver's seat. They had done everything they needed to do to get back on track after, you know, everything. They looked awful on opening weekend against Florida State, but they had gotten back on track, gotten a few conference wins. Now Ole Miss just throws the SEC West race completely on its head by knocking them off in Oxford. So, man, this SEC West race is going to be absolutely chaotic down the stretch this year. And Ole Miss has put themselves right back in the thick of it. So congratulations to Lane Kiffin. We'll see if the consistency can hold up. But, you know, a great win tonight. No negative things that I can say about it.
It's wild to go back to the preseason. And we were squinting at LSU's schedule to find one loss, let alone two, by the end of September. And yet that's where we sit. LSU is eliminated from playoff contention. Just like that, their ultimate goal and what a lot of folks were predicting out of the SEC West is over. Now, can they reach Atlanta still? Absolutely. They need to run the table. But I tell you what, my take that A&M knocks them off in the final game of the regular season, that's starting not to look so bad, especially with a relatively complete game from the Aggies today. LSU just plays zero defense. Now, Ole Miss plays zero defense, and we know that, right? That's kind of their brand. They've improved a little bit in the secondary, but boy, it wasn't on display tonight. Daniels threw for over 400 yards. But for LSU, a team that at time just stifled the life out of their opponents, especially with that pass rush, they're not the same team this year. They brought in a bunch of transfers in the secondary. Harold Perkins, I still feel like, is being just grossly underutilized after an award-winning season last year. And then you give up 177 on the ground to Quinshon Judkins, who, again, battling injury to start this year. But out of all the games that I would have picked for him to explode, this was not that game. I feel like this is a statement win for Ole Miss, but I also feel like, again, the SEC West continues to throw us into this blender where we don't really know who's good at this point. No. I mean, Garrett, what's the temperature there?
The temperature in, you know, Oxford is pretty hot right now, and it's because they did what I told them they needed to do, and it's to give this man the ball. You need to give Quinshon Judkins the ball. What'd they do? They gave him the ball 33 times. He took it 177 yards and a touchdown. I said this on the preview. I said, guys, I don't understand how they're not giving their best player any more play. Last week they gave him the ball, like, what, 13 times against Alabama? You have to be able to give your guy the ball. And when he's the guy on your team and he's that talented, you can't just give him, you know, 13 touches for a whole game. So you do that, look, all of a sudden your offense works a little bit better. So, you know, congratulations. That was awesome. Good for them. I'm not sure that Ole Miss has what it takes to run through a lot of it, because I'm still wondering if we know too much about defenses and offenses right now. I think that right now we're thinking, oh, this team looks like they have a good defense, or this team looks like they have a good offense. And we're still kind of waiting to see who's who. I think Bama might have a really, really good defense, and the Ole Miss just didn't show up last week, right? That might be what ended up happening. I'm not 100% sure. I'm curious to see what happens when they play other good defenses and who those good defenses are. I mean, is it A&M? They looked pretty good today on defense. Is it, you know, there have been some good defenses around. Auburn played pretty well on defense today against Georgia. So I think, you know, that had to be something you start to think about as well. So just kind of curious where they go from here, but they've got a heck of an offense. So they can definitely throw the ball around and run it when they have to. So yeah, I think it's something they're going to have to do to go through the end of their schedule. And if they want to compete, they already do have the conference loss. So they're going to have to, you know, upset a couple people that are going to be ahead of them. You know, a Texas A&M, you know, possibly depending on the outcome of next week, they're going to have to figure that out as well. So curious to see where they go from here. I think you're breathing a lot easier now, though, than if you already had the two losses and you had just lost LSU.
Over 800 yards passing in this game, 540 yards rushing. And it felt like Ole Miss gets that last minute touchdown drive. I felt like Trey Harris should have gone down on the 1 yard line. He scores. Gets the touchdown, leaves, what was it, 30-something seconds left on the clock for Jaden Daniels to get down the field. They get a big pass play. There's a horse collar. It felt like Ole Miss tried to do everything to throw the game away. And then as our buddy Parker at Stats of War tweeted out, Daniels is really bad under pressure. And in those moments where he needs to make a big throw, he stared down his wide receiver on both pass plays into the end zone. Threw the first ball when they had multiple shots at the end zone. He threw the first ball into quadruple coverage. You know, Daniels just, to me, he's a really good quarterback, but we've seen kind of time and time again, doesn't maybe have that X factor to win the big game. But yeah, the SEC West completely open. Trey, final thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I just, you know, one more praise on Ole Miss and Lane Kiffin, which just sounds gross to say out loud, but just kudos to them for being resilient, right? They could have folded like a lawn chair when they fell down in this game. I really thought the coaching decisions were questionable to end the first half when they're throwing with about 50 seconds left. They throw two incomplete passes, get a sack, give it right back, and they almost give up a field goal to tie the game right there going into halftime. And you think, you know, you do all that work, you play almost a perfect half offensively, and you're going to have a tie game to show for it going into halftime. And they really, LSU, credit to them for coming out in the second half and putting together a great offensive game plan, taking the lead back, but Ole Miss didn't falter. And that's something that you haven't been able to say about Lane Kiffin teams in the past. So kudos to them. They got it done. Now we got to see it consistently to be a true SEC West contender.
We've got a question here in the YouTube chat, Garrett. Who do we think the new top five will be Monday? So again, this is not the power rankings that we released on the preview show on Wednesday. This is who the top five will be according to the AP. I guess we'll use this to lead into Georgia. Do you guys think that Georgia is going to be the number one team on Monday?
Yes, because of the way the AP poll works, you usually don't see teams drop when they win, especially on the road in conference. I don't think enough people will drop them. They might lose some first place votes because they struggled with Auburn, but they'll still be number one.
Florida State dropped last week, though, after a win.
They did. Yeah, they did, which was bizarre. Like, I don't know why we're doing that.
Because they hate Florida State somehow. That's got to be what it is.
And Clemson's been one of the great powers of our sport for the last decade, and we beat them on the road for the first time in a decade, and we dropped. But, you know, it's whatever. But I think Georgia will be number one. Michigan, who was number two this week? I don't even remember. Was it Michigan?
I think it's still Michigan, yeah.
Michigan should still be number two. I don't think Michigan will jump Georgia by beating a bad Nebraska team. If it's me, it's probably Georgia, Michigan. I'm pulling up the AP poll right now. Probably Texas, number three still.
Yep.
Ohio State, and pick your poison at number five, I guess. Florida State, Oregon, Washington.
Oregon, Washington. It could have you could have USC. They shouldn't be going up based off their
performance. They might drop again. I think they'll drop again.
I would certainly lean towards that. I didn't get to defend my take on Thursday morning. I think Washington should be the top team. They're doing a solid job tonight against Arizona. That's a tricky game on the road in Tucson. That's a weird place to play. They just actually scored another touchdown here in the middle of the third quarter, so they're going to be up 28-10. I think they're the most complete team in college football, and I'm really excited to see how they continue to prove that going throughout the rest of the schedule. But
I'm going to say my only thing on that, and this was from the beginning of the show, I wanted to come back to this. Do we think Michigan separated themselves today? I know that Nebraska is a bad team. I get that they're not very good, but at the same time, I think Michigan did separate themselves. You said, they're not going to jump just because of beating a bad Nebraska. Well, why should Georgia stay there after beating a bad Auburn by seven? Like
I don't know that they should.
I'm not saying that you're trying to defend that. I'm just saying, well, why on earth would you say, you win by seven on the road, that's a gutsy win or whatever else. Meanwhile, Florida State just won on the road.
Yeah.
And they're just like, you barely escaped. It was Clemson. So I don't really understand that. I think Michigan has separated themselves at this point. I think that they are clearly better than what Georgia is right now. I think that you can rely on them a lot more to do what they need to do. And, I mean, what do you want from them? They're going to go out there and they're going to beat up the people on the field. They're going to be more physical. They're going to just slowly, methodically push you away. And that's just what Michigan does. So I think that's where it goes from here. And I don't know. I think Michigan's the best team right now. I would drop Georgia to three if it were up to me, but that's just me.
Well, and that's a great segue. Let's wrap the rest of the SEC here. Number one, Georgia hangs on for dear life over Auburn on the Plains, 27-20. Guys, my big question here, how many times is Georgia going to step on the landmine before it goes off? I've tweeted in 3 weeks that landmine gif about the Georgia Bulldogs, all three of them in the first half. They come out, they're asleep at the wheel. They give up an early touchdown. They fall behind. Today, they fell behind 10-0 to a hapless Auburn team offensively. No offense, our friends over at the Uptempo Pod. That's a defensive team right now.
They would agree. they would agree.
one of the worst quarterbacked teams in the country, and they're up 10-0 on the team that the AP poll continues to tell you is the best team in the land. Listen, I know the AP poll doesn't watch these games. They've proven that week in and week out. Regardless of if you think they're the top team in the land or not, eventually one of these games is not going to go their way. And today it was nearly against War Eagle. What's it going to take for Georgia to finally lose one of these games? Is it going to be in the regular season? Is it a Kentucky? Is it Florida? or do we have to get to the SEC championship game before the Dogs finally get exposed?
Well, here's the problem, because I think exposed is a strong word. Let's remember, let's back up. Let's remember this is a road rivalry game. I know that this hasn't been a competitive rivalry for the last however many years. I highlighted that on the preview show, but this is a road rivalry game. It looked like Auburn finally had a solid game plan to not rely on the arms of their quarterbacks, but rather the legs of their quarterbacks. And that was something that they did well. And I think it is very concerning that you let Auburn, a team that cannot pass, run for 219 yards on you. Not excusing that, not, you know, pushing that to the side. But this is still the most talented team in the country. The talent on the field does matter, and the defense is still extremely elite. So I'm going to read off the rest of their schedule to you guys. And if you say that somebody's going to get them, you tell me where, because Kentucky is, I know they look great against Florida today, but that's an extremely flawed team that turned it on against Florida today. At Vanderbilt, no. Florida and Jacksonville, maybe if they get up for a big rivalry game, but that's an extremely flawed team that can't throw the football. Missouri, maybe. They've looked plucky. They're still undefeated, and the offense is really fun. I guess that's where you would say, but that's at home, okay? Yep. Ole Miss at home. We just talked about how their defense gave up a ton of yards, and you know they're not consistent, so we'll wait and see on that one. At Tennessee, at Georgia Tech to end the year, I can't pick them in a vacuum to lose any one of those games. That doesn't mean they won't lose one of them, and they might, but if you're asking me to pick in a vacuum just straight up those games, I'm going to pick Georgia in every single one of those.
Yeah, I think in a vacuum that makes sense. For me, I'm looking at that and saying, okay, but this is a team that can only run the football. We just saw that out of Kentucky, that they put their nose to the grindstone and just ran the football all up and down on Florida. If Auburn can do this, what's Kentucky going to do to them? Because I think that's something they got to really worry about, get those, you know, trenches shored up. And then, yeah, I am looking at teams like an Ole Miss or like a Tennessee and saying, like, they can score. They can score points. Like, if you can score points on Georgia this year, it doesn't seem like their defense is quite what it used to be. Maybe they're just finding their rhythm. Maybe they're just figuring it out. But it doesn't look like the defense has been nearly as dominant.
They still haven't given up a ton of points. They've given up 7-3, 14, 21, 20 today.
Sure. Like, but it's not like they're as dominant up front as they have been. And that's fine. They were at elite levels. But I'm just saying they're not as elite as they have been in the past. And I think that, you know, while they're still considered a favorite, I still think they're the favorite to win the SEC. I still think they should be a favorite to make the playoff. I don't think that they're at that level. And I think that this is going to make them susceptible to say, like, yeah, like, if you are going to, you know, get your butt whooped in the trenches, then, like, look out, because you've got Kentucky on the schedule. Look out, because Quinshon Judkins is on your schedule. Like, there's a lot that you have to look out for. And I think that you just have to acknowledge it in order to say, like, if you want to be that way as Georgia, and if you want to be that team that's going to go for your three-peat, you have to fix it in the trenches. You have to fix some of those issues that you're facing right now, right? You have to be at that level, because when you hit the playoff and you go up against a Michigan, right, or you go up against a Washington or an Ohio State or somebody like that, those teams can all run the football effectively. And those teams can all use that to set up play action and to set up the downfield stuff, and they'll beat you over the top. And so far, your offense hasn't proven that it's explosive enough to keep up with anything like that. So I'm concerned about it at the bigger scale. Maybe not right here, but at the bigger scale, I'm a lot more concerned, and I think they have to look out for some stuff like that.
As I was looking over Georgia's schedule on ESPN, just ESPN gaffe of the day, they still have as the lead article on the Georgia Bulldogs page, Deion and Shador delivering late night magic in Boulder from week 3. A two-week-old article that ESPN is still pushing down your throats, an average Colorado team that should have gotten blown out against USC today. We'll talk about that in a second.
At least it's not Taylor Swift. So we got that going.
So right about that.
Ugh. That is fair.
I'll take all the Deion coverage over Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce.
That's a good point. One final note. Auburn's defense looked really good. Very physical, forced 2 turnovers. Shout out to them.
Auburn has a great defense. They are a half team. They are borderline Iowa levels at times, but
yeah,
they have a fantastic defense. That's going to cause some problems in the SEC West this year for a couple teams. We've already seen that. They held A&M in check for a good chunk of that game last week. Yeah. They held Georgia in check for a good chunk of this game. That defense is going to come to play every week.
Brock Bowers, that dude, 8 catches, 157 yards, the game-winning touchdown. He had back-to-back catches with one hand that should not have been humanly possible. Brock Bowers is going to be...
He's from a different planet. He's not from here.
I think he should be a top five pick. I mean, we drafted Kyle Pitts in the top five. That's going great for Atlanta because they won't throw to him. But Brock Bowers should absolutely be one of those high draft picks, no doubt about it.
Would you guys? Where would you guys put him in the Heisman pecking order right now? Is he even on the radar right now? And would a tight end ever win?
No, there's too many quarterbacks like Caleb Williams lighting it up.
Or like Bo Nix or Kate Hinn. And
let's say Georgia goes undefeated and they, you know, start to figure it out on offense, and it's obviously not Carson Beck, it is Brock Bowers. Does he get a New York invite?
I don't know, man. It's so tough. Yeah. Like Heisman voters are known for their horrific decision making. So I kind of fail to give them the benefit.
And it's not that he's not talented, but he'd have to finish with like stupid statistical numbers. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like he'd finish with like,
I think he might, because no one else is going to catch the ball.
1800 yards and like, you know, 20 plus touchdowns. Like he'd have to finish with something stupid to get there.
I love the YouTube chat. He's not sexy enough. Hey, he was talking about someone who's really excited about the Taylor Swift news. Brock Bowers said that was a win for tight ends everywhere. That's what he got with him. Wrapping up the SEC, you have Tennessee knocking off South Carolina 41-20. Spencer Rattler was running for his life, doesn't even throw for 200 yards. The trench play for the Gamecocks is going to hold them back all year long. It did look like Brew McCoy suffered probably a season-ending ankle injury. That was horrific. I'm not going to recommend you go look that up on Twitter, but he's likely done for an extended amount of time. Missouri beats Vanderbilt 38-21. And then Alabama just went final against Mississippi State. Boy, the Bulldogs just never show up against the Tide. It's a housing every single time. 40-17.
They said on the broadcast that Will Rogers threw his first touchdown pass against Alabama in the third quarter or something like that. That's just, yeah. Mississippi State does not play the Alabama Crimson Tide.
Jalen Milroe, 10 of 12, 164 yards. And the team
at the end of the third quarter, he was 5 for 5. And that was just fantastic. They had put up 31 points with him going 5 for 5.
Unreal.
Alabama, they finally figured it out. They just don't make him throw. Just run. And he did great running the ball. And most of the time, Alabama's going to win that way.
11 carries, 69 yards, 2 touchdowns. Jace McClellan had 63 yards and a tutter as well. Alabama has to roll into College Station next week. Let's talk about Texas A&M, an impressive win over the Arkansas Razorbacks, 34-22. Guys, this game wasn't as close as the scoreboard would indicate. A&M had 3 sloppy turnovers, including a pick six coming out of the break. Looked like a missed block from a wide receiver on a screen that might have otherwise been open. But A&M's defense was the story for me. 7 sacks, 15 tackles for loss. I believe they held Arkansas to just 16 true points on offense, and even 3 more of those were off of a bad fumble from A&M. They had 20 sacks all of last year. They have 17 in the last 3 weeks against Power 5 opponents. Talk to me about the Aggies. Like, not a complete game. And I did call KJ mid, Austin. Thank you for pointing that out. I called him mid in the preseason. Everyone was hyping up KJ Jefferson as this elite quarterback, maybe even the best in the SEC. And he's just not. Now, he had no offensive line. That's a side topic. We'll get there in a second. But
and he has Dan Enos calling plays and trying to make him into a pocket passer, which is just brutal. Like, talk about not using your best player in his best capability. Like, that's just so dumb to me. When they said that in the preseason at SEC Media Days, like, just as soon as I heard that, I was like, Arkansas is going to struggle to go 6-6 this year because that's not who KJ Jefferson is.
KJ rushed 18 carries, -3 yards. And obviously the sacks.
7 of those are sacks.
8 sacks will do that. It was 8 sacks. Yeah. 8 sacks will do that to you.
But yeah, just not using KJ in the way that he needs to be used. So talk to me about the Aggies. Let's talk about the winner here. Their offense looked fairly competent. Max Johnson running the show, Le'Veon Moss toting the rock. Where's A&M's ceiling here? Because I think you could make a case that now, especially with LSU going down, you beat Alabama, and suddenly the SEC West, you're controlling your destiny.
I mean, you know, the ceiling is definitely this year is going to Atlanta. Will they hit that ceiling? Who knows? We'll learn a lot more about this team by this time next week when we're recapping the A&M Alabama game. But listen, the offense is efficient. They might not put up a ton of points. They might not be putting up 50, 60 points every week. But the biggest difference that you notice on the field this year is they are in scoring position often. Now, they're settling for a lot of field goal attempts right now. They're having some drive stall out in the red zone or right around the red zone. But it is efficient. They're scoring touchdowns. They're in scoring position very, very often. Max Johnson's a capable backup. I think the offense still has a really high ceiling there. And all of a sudden, it looks like DJ Durkin has figured out how to use the best position group on the team, the defensive line. Because the last 2 weeks, I know they're not going up against stalwarts on the offensive line in Auburn and Arkansas, but they're exploiting mismatches. They are changing things up. They're giving different looks, and they're bringing pressure from different angles. And it's getting home, and it's doing a great job, right? So, I mean, you have to be pretty positive if you're an A&M fan right now. I know it's a fan base that loves to find the negative in everything, but I think you have to be pretty positive right now. This is a big, big game, maybe one of the biggest games of Jimbo Fisher's tenure next week in College Station, and the winner of that one is going to control their own destiny in the West the rest of the way. So huge, huge matchup on deck in College Station against Alabama, and the Aggies look really, really hot coming into it.
Yeah, and you got to say, like, the defense playing better, I think, gives A&M fans a real boost of confidence because of just how bad it played at the beginning of the year against Miami. You have to say, like, look, this is still a team, I think, on the back end that has issues. I'm going to agree with John here with the comment here. You know, Aggies need help in the secondary badly. I tend to agree with that. I think that a big part of why they've been so successful is the pass rush and because they've been getting home. But at the same time, they're playing better. And however it is, if it's, you know, going to be nothing but, you know, can't throw the ball because you don't got time to sit there and deliver the ball, I'm fine with that. I think that that works for a lot of A&M fans. So there's that. And I think the hard part about it for A&M fans, and I'm going to say something that might trigger some Aggie fans here, but on offense, because you're working without your starting quarterback, who I think had, you know, really gained a lot of the locker room and built a lot of chemistry with guys at this point, I think that it's just up to, you know, for lack of a better word, offensive execution and just trying to finish drives, figure out how to finish plays. They're clearly in a good spot. They're clearly, you know, yeah, they're in a place to, you know, win games if they can finish drives, but it's just the little careless mistakes. So if they can do that, if they can start to execute a little bit on offense, they'll start turning some of those into touchdowns. And I think it'll turn out pretty good for Aggie fans by the end of the year.
And the play calling has been a lot better. Like, I know there was a lot of, you know, gnashing of teeth about who is actually going to have control. It's very clear that it's Bobby Petrino's offense, and he is calling what he wants to call.
Suddenly, after Garrett's soapbox, I'm transported back to 2018. I'm holding a recorder in one hand and fighting off other reporters in the other.
Just got to execute in the way that we do things and the way in which we do it.
Do things so you do them right, and then you'll do them till you can't do them wrong. Yeah, we're going back in time a little bit there. Arkansas, last note here on the Hogs, 174 total yards is what Garrett put on the graphic. Total yards of offense, 115 of that was in the first quarter. All that amounted to was two field goals. So the Aggies had the bend don't break defense working early.
And a huge chunk of that was on the last play when they hit that big bomb to make it like a 12-point game. So a massive part of that game was spent with A&M not letting Arkansas do anything.
Play that the ball was on the ground very clearly on the replay, but that's a whole nother rant. The SEC's officiating just is so bad for a conference that likes to say it's the premier conference in college football.
did not call a single hold today. There was a hold on literally every single play.
Did y'all saw the stat that Arkansas is the most penalized team in the nation, and they were called for zero penalties today?
Yep. Okay. That may have less to do with SEC officiating, more to do with something about Jerry Jones, but I'm not gonna go into too many conspiracy
theories on that.
Greasing the skids. Last team in the SEC, and we'll keep it moving. Kentucky 33, Florida 14. Yeah, the Gators shouldn't have been ranked this week, guys. I think we all saw at least some sort of disappointment coming. Third time in the last six seasons that Kentucky has started 5-0. Mark Stoops has the best job in college sports. He's getting paid $9 million to go, 7-5, 8-4 every year. At least that's the expectation. And nobody will say boo. This is Kentucky football. They run the ball. They had a tremendous day on the ground. Ray Davis rushed for all the yards, 280 of them, three touchdowns. They held Florida to just 69 yards rushing. Trey, nice. Earlier you said Florida can't throw the ball. I'll push back on that just a little bit, because even though Graham Mertz gets all this hate, he's actually the fourth most accurate passer in the country. They showed that on a graphic this morning, and that blew my mind. Mertz moved the ball okay through the air, but their bread and butter is handing it off, moving the pile, rushing down the field, and you got to win with some time of possession. And they did none of that today. They turned the football over a couple of times. Kentucky was just the better team today.
Yeah, and I'm pulling up the stats right now because I want to see how many times Mertz had to throw it. And I guess it was only 30, so that was actually a really efficient performance for him. But just... yeah, when your defense is giving up as that many run yards, you really don't have a chance. It doesn't matter how well you're running or throwing the football, right? You're probably not going to win the game. But hats off to Kentucky, because Garrett and I really didn't give them a lot of a chance in this one on the preview pod. We kind of picked Florida to come in there and take care of business. But, Kentucky's looking like the team we thought they could be. They just hadn't shown it yet. So maybe they were sandbagging. Maybe they weren't showing their hand until they got to the Florida game. But kudos to Kentucky. Big one with Georgia coming up really, really soon.
Well, and it was finally establishing themselves and proving that they were real. Like, that was our thing, was we were like, which of these teams is real? We don't really know. We're like, maybe it's Kentucky, maybe it's Florida. We went with Florida because Mertz was the more efficient passer, though, I think you have a bigger, boom bust with Leary. But passing game was not a factor today for Kentucky. They didn't need it to be a factor. They ran for 329 yards. They did whatever they wanted to on the ground. So,
and that's when they're at their best. You're absolutely right. That's when they're at their best.
And so I think if you're able to establish the run, if they're able to just do that, that's going to win them a lot of games. That might be the formula against Georgia. Don't give them a lot of chances. Don't let them hold the ball, force them to execute at a high level, gash some of that, upfront stuff. That might be the formula if you're Kentucky to win that game. So I'm not necessarily saying that they're gonna win that game. I'm just saying that's a raised eyebrow game for me, whereas previously I might not have believed too much in Kentucky.
Guys, let's go down to the Pac-12 and three games of note, one of them still in progress. Let's start with just mentioning number 7 Washington going into the fourth quarter only up 11 on Arizona. That's a 3-1 Arizona team at home. Michael Penix Jr. is throwing for all the yards again, 367 of them, but he has not thrown for a touchdown pass. They have two touchdowns from Dylan Johnson, one from Will Nixon, and one from Jeremy Bernard. All four of those are rushing scores. So we'll keep you updated as we continue to go throughout the night there. The two games that I kind of want to focus on in the Pac-12, you have number 8 USC hanging on against Colorado, 48-41. We'll talk about Oregon State as well, upsetting number 10, Utah. I'm sure Garrett will have some thoughts there. But guys, let's lead off with what I term a verified take. Not a hot take, not a scalding take. I don't think there's any sort of clickbait in this. Alex Grinch is what is keeping USC from actually contending for a national title. Agree or disagree?
I agree. And I think the only thing that you could say to argue that is if you're one of the people that believes that there will just never be a true full-out air raid team that has an elite defense. That's the only other argument you could have, because you would just say that Garrett Riley's offense is in some way holding his defense back because they score too quickly. I'm not saying that's what I say, but I know there is a contingent of that out there. I'm with you, Mitch. Alex Grinch is booty butt.
might need to tweet that out.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. The things are not necessarily doing that good. We like the comment here from Andrew. USC defense or Duncanville high defense. I don't know which would give USC a better chance to win right now. Probably Duncanville. Actually.
If they got Duncanville's DC, they'd probably be the better.
Oh, yeah. That would probably put them in a better spot to win. I think, you know, Grinch is just, yeah, he's ruining it right now for USC. They can do whatever they want to on offense. If you just had a competent defense that could, you know, kind of hold people to 14, 21, you know, 28, you know, give up like 28 points per game, you'd probably go undefeated. So, look, USC still has the firepower to maybe overcome that, but yeah, it's gonna come back to get them, I think.
Tell you what, like all of five people are gonna understand who this is, but Ramil Borner, Duncanville High, shout out you, man. The best defense in the state of Texas. Yeah, listen, I don't know.
I love that, John. I could see that happening.
That is a great comment. YouTube comment coming in. Dave Aranda for USC defensive coordinator. Now listen. That cry might be a little louder if Baylor hadn't had a historic win on the road in the bounce house today. But I agree. I think Aranda is a better defensive coordinator. USC needs another answer here because of two things. One, the defense is just flat out not that good. They are wasting talent. The likes that, you know, we haven't seen from USC when they're an actual championship contender. Right now, Matt Leinart, Reggie Bush, obviously elite offense, but the defense was also something to fear, something to behold. That's not this defense. That's not a Trojan defense. That's not a Sooner defense under Alex Grinch. And so my question is, where are the bodies buried that Grinch knows about? Because that, why is Lincoln keeping him around? He is the only thing that, in my mind, keeps Lincoln at arm's reach from hoisting a national championship trophy at some time in the near future. We might waste Caleb Williams and all of his beautiful perfection in this college game because Alex Grinch is the man that you're relying on to get a stop when the game matters in a playoff. That is absolutely ridiculous to me. I mean, Caleb Williams throws 6 touchdown passes today, first time since 2014 that a USC quarterback had done that. If you just tell me, yeah, Caleb Williams threw 6 touchdown passes and over 350 yards against Colorado's defense, I would ask you if they won by 30 or if they won by 40. But instead, you had USC's defense fail to come out of the locker room. They did not play hard. They looked like they were counting their wins already. They were counting their NIL money. And Colorado nearly stormed back to win this football game, guys.
Well, and credit where credit's due. Shedeur Sanders balled out in the fourth quarter and almost brought that team back. Like, this was, I think, as much of Colorado doing good things as it was USC doing bad things. Like, yes, if they were playing a team at USC's caliber, they should have a better defense, so it shouldn't happen. But Colorado fought back in this one to do everything they possibly could to try to give himself a chance. And so, you know, I'm not necessarily going to be the biggest Colorado fan here. I do like what they're doing long term. I do think that this will work out for Colorado long term, but I think, you know, this had a lot. This was just a bad spot for USC. I'm nervous about them long term because once they have to go up against teams like Washington and Oregon and stuff like that, this is going to be a problem because this didn't happen last week to Colorado when they played Oregon, right? Oregon shut them down. I think that Washington would do something similar. I don't think that USC can probably keep up with these top tier teams if they're going to keep playing defense at this level.
I'm very curious to see just what their ceiling is. You know, they play a team like Utah, they play a team like Oregon. I don't know if they can hold off the dogs. You're talking about teams that have elite defenses in Oregon, Washington, Utah. To me, USC is well below all of those. And at the end of the day, as we keep saying, defense does tend to win championships, certainly out west in the in the Pac-12. Speaking of a game where a defense won this, Oregon State knocks off number 10 Utah 21-7. The story here was the Beavers dominating on the defensive side of the ball. They took control on the ground. Damian Martinez has another good night. Under 200 total yards of offense for Utah. And Garrett, I felt like this was the concern coming in. We just don't know when Cam Rising is going to return. They're clearly a different offense when he's not under center. and nothing went right for Utah.
I was honestly kind of shocked to see that they almost made it to the 200-yard mark. Like, watching it on the screen, it looked worse than that. The 2-for-13 on third down was obvious. You just can't move the ball. They don't really have a quarterback. Nate Johnson gives them their better chance, but they just don't have anything on offense when Cam Rising's not there. They don't have a quarterback, and without their quarterback, none of the play action works. You can sell out to stop the run. And Oregon State, I mean, hats off to them. They did a great job stopping the run, shutting things down, and, you know, forcing Utah off the field so they could just kind of stay on the field, do whatever they want to do. So, look, it sucks because I still think this is a really good defense. At a certain point, you're going to get gassed. But I think that you have to get to a certain point when, you know, this is kind of the opposite of USC. You have to be able to put something of a product on the field on the other side to give your chance or to give your team a chance to win, right? For USC, it was they don't have a defense. They almost lose to Colorado. For Utah, it's, well, hey, your lack of an offense finally caught up with you. With Cam Rising, all that's fine, but you've known that he wasn't going to be ready for a while. It's just been an injury spanning into the offseason. So the fact that they don't have anything ready, I think, is concerning to me. It would be concerning to me if I was a Utes fan, and I'm certainly on the Utes bandwagon. But, yeah, this is not a great spot for them. That being said, they are well on their way to a 4-loss conference championship like they're used to. So let's do that if we're the Utes, right?
Do you think they're using Nate Johnson well? Like, do you think they're utilizing his skill set well? Because I'm looking at the box score. He had 9 carries for 3 yards. I know sacks are factored into that.
Right.
But it seems like it'd be better to kind of build an offense around RPOs and zone reads.
And just get him out of the pocket. Move the pocket a little bit, right? If you can just find a way to get him on a rollout and to get him in some space where he can, say, make 1, maybe 2 reads and then go, you're going to have a lot more success with that. Even if it limits your playbook, even if it does that, you can't expect him to sit back, try to attempt to pass, or just do, you know, quarterback draws up the gut or something like that. That's just not going to work long term.
2-of-13 on third down. That is that's a tough number. That's a tough number for Utah. And Oregon State was a dangerous team coming in. They lost up on the Palouse in a weird one last week, but this is still a very good football team. They don't need a ton from DJU to be a dangerous team, to be a top 20 team. They proved that this weekend with that win over Utah. Oregon boat races Stanford after a little bit of a sluggish start, 42-6. And then Cal knocks off Arizona State 31-17, by the way, the score right now in the Washington game. We'll keep moving on from the Pac-12, though. Let's go to the Big 12, where, as we mentioned, right as we went live on air, West Virginia knocks off TCU. Guys, very quickly, I don't really want to dive into that game necessarily. There were a lot of other games going on the screen, but West Virginia's defense, they've come to play. They sacked Chandler Morris on 2 key plays late in that ballgame to knock TCU out of field goal range. And you start to look at West Virginia's schedule, and listen, I don't think they're a good football team at all, but they're finding ways to win right now. West Virginia could be the team that no one saw coming in the Big 12.
I tried to warn y'all about Neil Brown and him doing some crazy stuff this year with his back against the wall, and no one would listen to me. And here we are, top of the Big 12.
But see, I don't know if
you didn't see this coming. I mean, come on.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I don't know if it's the offense doing crazy stuff. I think it's the defense that's been kind of, you know, leading that charge. Now they did have 201 yards rushing today. Garrett Green threw it for a staggering 142 yards, was sub 50% on his passing completions. But hey, you know, we'll put all that aside. Trey, you've got it in your title. Just win, baby. And that's exactly what West Virginia's doing. Mentioned earlier, Baylor with a historic win over Central Florida. Who saw this coming? We from the spring were saying this is a loss for Baylor. The bounce house is going to get them. And then Baylor limps out to an egregious start this season. And I mean, I all but thought UCF moneyline was the safest bet of the weekend. They get out to a 21-0 lead less than halfway through the first quarter and then proceed to lose that. It is the biggest comeback win in Baylor history. Is there anything that we can take away from this game, or is this just kind of like one of those weird get used to it here in the new Big 12 games?
You can take away that Baylor is resilient, that they're better than we thought they were. All they needed was their quarterback back. Look, they got their quarterback back and things are fine.
Sure. We'll see how long the shaping holds up. But no, it was 21-0. It was also 35-7 with like 3 minutes left in the third quarter.
You don't come back like that on a fluke, though. Like, you have to be a solid team to be able to come back from a team like on a game like that.
Well, and I'm pulling up the drive summary because it's 35-10. You know, UCF throws an interception, Baylor goes down and scores. Four play drive punt for three and out for UCF, immediately a touchdown. Fumble, scoop, and score, three and out, field goal, miss field goal, that's your ball game. So it took an epic collapse from UCF as well. You don't blow away a 25-point fourth quarter lead. Speaking as a Texas A&M fan, I know what it feels like to watch your team fumble a bag like that. So it's a combination of things. You're absolutely right. It was resilience from Baylor, but it was an epic collapse from UCF that just kept getting sadder and sadder.
And an all-time call in that game, too. That call will go down as one of my favorite calls forever, where the voice cracked, "It's good!" And he's just, like, screaming. That was one of my favorite things I've ever heard. It was incredible all the way around.
Trey, our team won today, man. Can't you just let us be happy for a little bit? Monterey Baldwin, 7 catches for 150 and a touchdown. He had a big performance in that one. Number 14, Oklahoma, puts up 50, hangs half a Benjamin on an Iowa State team that I've been led to believe plays really good defense, Trey. That wasn't the case today. Oklahoma had 40 of those points at the half. It sets up an undefeated clash in Dallas next week between the Sooners and the Longhorns. I won't ask you to obviously preview that game yet, but Oklahoma is, I think, winning more and more people over that they are a complete team. A little bit of an offensive, maybe nap last week against Cincinnati, a good Cincinnati defense, but still, I think they more than showed that they're up for the challenge against the Cyclones team today.
I think the offense is awake now. I think it's fair to say we were waiting on the offense to catch up to the defense with Oklahoma, which is not something we're used to saying over the last decade. Credit partially to your favorite defensive coordinator, Mitch, but I'm really, really excited for the Red River rivalry next week. It's going to be a fantastic game. Could be a defensive struggle. I would not be surprised if that is a really low scoring game, because both of those defenses are really talented, really well coached, and they're going to come to play.
Does anybody have a line on the over under from Texas? I know we had the early betting line.
I am looking it up right now.
I would be curious to know what that over-under is. Garrett, you had a thought?
I was going to say, I think this is a chance to be one of the best games that we've seen in a while between these two teams. Like, this is probably the best product both of them have brought to the field at the same time in a long time.
Someone correct me if I'm wrong. I think this is the first time that both Texas and Oklahoma have been undefeated heading into this game since 2011. I want to say I saw that as a stat. Correct me if I'm wrong, but that's what memory's bringing to mind right now. Fun game. I can already tell you that's probably our feature game of the week, leading off the broadcast on Wednesday. Texas Tech beats Houston. I think Houston might possibly be running for the worst team in the Big 12. Apologies to BYU. I insulted you guys last week. I said you were the worst 3-0 team in the country. Now, listen, you lost to we go full screen treatment. I'm sorry, guys. Listen, you lost to Kansas. I will not apologize for picking Kansas in that game, but you were plucky, and you came to bat against Cincinnati this week, 35-27. That's a quality win. Cincinnati's not an explosive offense, but they do have a really good defense, and I told you that in the preseason. So to put 35 on the board against them, you had a sweet, halftime show or whenever the mascot was doing backflips over the flaming rope. I think we can go back to Tri-Box, Garrett. My apologies over here. But, sometimes I swing and miss, and I swung and missed on BYU. Any other
my preview article, man. You should have read the Transfer Portal CFP preview magazine.
I did read that article, and I saw what they did against Sam Houston State, and I made the critical error of making assumptions that I probably shouldn't have. So that's my bad.
Hey, I do want to say before we move on from the Big 12, pretty robust conversation happening in chat right now on the Big 12. Loving it right now. A couple of these are just going to pop up right there. Blake, the difference, Chapin, of course. Preston says, Chapin makes them better, but they're still booty cheeks. Of course, we reply with the Big 12 might be booty cheeks this year. Anyways, got a couple of thoughts here. Iowa State's got awful. I threw in and Oklahoma State, who, of course, lost and then lost to South Alabama. This makes Austin upset. He says he's out because it's rude. And then wants me to ask you where your degrees are from.
I know he went to Oklahoma State. I don't remember if he has a degree from Texas or not, but then we worked together at Dallas Baptist University.
Yeah.
So I know he's got a degree there.
But John agrees with me that Oklahoma State does.
They are bad.
It's no hate. I got a sister that goes to Oklahoma State. Love Oklahoma State. Been up there. Eskimo Joe's is some of the best fries you're going to find anywhere in the world. And they're still so bad at football. They were getting booed off the field at halftime against South Alabama. They're just kind of bad this year.
If you're listening to the podcast and are just lost, watch the YouTube show. That's all I'll leave you there. Let's go to the ACC, and then we'll get to the Big Ten and some fun Group of Five results. And we'll get out of here with our late night show. Clemson beat Syracuse 31-14. Guys, I had the feeling that in the now known as the JMA Wireless Bowl, or Wireless Dome, whatever it's called, I thought Syracuse would make this weird. I thought this would be a close game. The offense for Syracuse has looked really solid. They pulled away from Army last week. They threw the ball deep like 20 times today, and it wasn't working. And you went away from Garrett Schrader's best asset, which is his legs, and Cade Klubnik made enough throws to win. It's a solid performance for the Tigers, 31-14. Syracuse held to just 286 yards. I'm kind of disappointed in Dino Babers in the play calling.
The answer to Syracuse is good. No, they're not good. I said no. I said it on the preview. I just want to point it out. I said it. I said they're not good. I said this would be a spot where Klubnik could break out and start to get things rolling. Next.
Does their coaching staff wager on Clemson in these games? Because remember last year they refused to give it to Sean Tucker at all down the stretch of that game, and they could have iced pleased. It. Yeah, like what are we doing, guys? Like, do we just think we're playing Clemson and we forget our team's strengths the whole game? Like, what are we doing?
Some very, very odd play calling. Louisville 13-10 over NC State. We've obviously talked about Notre Dame beating Duke.
I hope you talk to your kids about 5-0 Louisville, because it is here and it is too late if you did not already talk to your kids.
Garrett was a year early on that. Bowling Green beat Georgia Tech today, and they not only beat them, they beat them by double digits, 38-27.
Georgia Tech truthers, where you at?
Because... I was going to say, you sent a text. The Ramblin' Wreck has multiple flat tires right now. The worst part is it's not even Haynes King's fault. He threw for almost 400 yards today, had four touchdowns, did throw two interceptions, not excusing him for that. But the passing offense was fine. It was that the defense couldn't get a stop when they absolutely had to. Even worse, they were wearing their ghost uniforms. You hate when you bust out an alternate look and then lose to a Group of Five opponent at home. Connor Bazelak teed you up, the former Indiana transfer who couldn't do anything for the
former Mizzou guy. I remember when he was spinning it at Mizzou.
Yeah. So yeah, not great for the Ramblin' Wreck. We're going to have to call AAA. I think we're pulled over to the side of the road right now. Getting that thing up on a jack.
Yeah. It's a pretty tough scene. I did write the preview for both of these teams. I wrote the preview for both these teams. I did not think that that Bowling Green would have any chance to win this game, but I did write both their previews. It didn't shock me to see what happened. I knew that Bowling Green had this kind of performance in them. I just didn't know that Georgia Tech could be this bad on defense. And it's starting to make me understand, guys, when I look back at it, this is a really bad defense for Georgia Tech. This is why I think their spring game was basically like a virtual scrimmage, where they were like, it kind of didn't have a full-time defense and you were kind of playing just like offensive possessions against the defense the whole time. And it was just like to run up the score. I'm kind of starting to understand why that was probably the case, was just to kind of sell tickets and get people excited, because this defense is not a real product and they have to find a way to fix it, or else things are going to go downhill pretty quick for the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets.
Elsewhere, Tony Musket throws 3 touchdowns in his return as the Virginia quarterback. Doesn't matter. They lose in Chestnut Hill. They are 0-5. Virginia Tech.
Really unlucky 0-5, too. Like, they've been so close every week.
They are. Virginia Tech wins. They beat Pitt. That is a hapless Pitt team. My hottest take out of the ACC this preseason was that Pat Narduzzi, who has never had a losing record at Pitt, the floor would fall out. This Pitt team was going to be bad. I didn't even really say that with full conviction. I just looked at the rosters, looked at the schedule, and couldn't keep giving Pitt wins. And that is proving to be true. This is a terrible football team. They have no quarterback play. Djurkovic does throw 2 touchdowns today, but the offense is just anemic. The defense can't stop anybody. This is an ultimate reset season, a rebuilding year for Pat Narduzzi. Let's go over to the Big Ten. Michigan wins 45-7 over Nebraska. Now, Garrett, a lot of folks on the Twitter saying that Michigan should be the runaway top team in the land. I'm in the camp that still says that's great. They're handling business. Awesome. Good team should do that. They haven't played anybody with a pulse yet, and that includes Nebraska. Where are you on kind of power rankings? Would you say that Michigan is the top team, or what else do you need to see if not?
Michigan is your top team right now. Okay, this is the only team so far that I don't think has looked bad in a game. I don't think that there's really been a moment where you'd say, oh, they look really bad. They've had moments where they weren't executing. They've had moments where they weren't necessarily doing what they needed to do. But there's not a point where I would say, oh, like, they really let this dumb team hang around with them forever. And then, you know, kind of sort of pulled it out at the end, but it was kind of fluky. Their style of football is to push on you and to lean on you and to wear you down slowly, and then to kind of just pull away. And this is what they do. I think that this is a real, real good team. And also, someone who's not getting anywhere close to the props that he needs right now, Roman Wilson is quietly becoming one of the better tools in this offense. 15 catches, 268, and 6 touchdowns on the season. Not necessarily massive numbers in terms of yardage, but the touchdowns is huge. And he's being effective as a pass catcher. So, look, this Michigan offense, if they can kind of get things rolling and they have their guys out wide, they have what they need, I think that Michigan is the top team right now. I would love to see them on neutral fields against some of these other teams, like a Georgia who starts slow, like a Florida State who slipped up against Boston College, like, you know, Texas who, you know, they've got some good wins, but, you know, they played a bad Baylor without Blake Shapen. They played, you know, Kansas without Jalen Daniels. They played, you know, I think even Wyoming was missing their starting quarterback. So, you know, kind of struggled with them for a little bit. So be curious to see how it would work on a neutral field against some of those top teams.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, Garrett. I think Michigan, if they're not going to win a national title this year, I don't think they ever will. Plain and simple right now.
Yeah,
I think you're absolutely right.
I'll join you in that camp as well. The team out of the Big Ten that I picked to win the conference and to go to the playoff is Penn State. Not impressive. A 41-13 win. If you
second half was impressive. Second half was great.
Well, I was gonna say, if you look at the box score and you go, okay, well, you know, Penn State salted them away. Northwestern also did absolutely everything they could to lose this game by 50. I mean, the lack of execution, the turnovers. Drew Aller doesn't even throw for 200 yards again, and Penn State has to win on the ground. Now, I knew that Penn State's ground game was going to be their calling card, but Drew Aller has really been, he's looked like a young quarterback, and it's not necessarily his fault. It's just going to hurt me in my pick if Penn State can't go on the road to beat Ohio State, if they can't beat Michigan in Happy Valley, right? I'm certainly losing some steam and maybe wishing I'd taken Washington as that surprise playoff pick. Shout out Trey for that. I just don't know if Penn State's going to be complete enough to win a Big 12 title. Elsewhere, Louisiana gave Minnesota a real scare. They were up at the half 17-14, but they do lose. Minnesota comes back, takes that one away 35-24. We keep letting Garrett get free Ledger Nuggies on Maryland. They're 5-0. They blast Indiana 44-17.
Keep doubting, my guys. Slow and steady wins the race, man.
It's not, well, I'm not doubting Maryland at all. I just
hairpins going slow and steady. I love it.
Yeah.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Purdue, it was everything I could do to not throw that in the preview.
Purdue blows out Illinois. Brett Bielema says that he may have to get, quote, involved in the offensive play calling. He says their team's really looking for an identity, which is not what you want to hear if you're the OC. Yeah. And Iowa beats Michigan State 26-16. They need a special teams touchdown and a pick six from Cooper DeJean to beat the Spartans. But they do hit their over. Sad for my Ledger bet. And it's an impressive defensive performance for Iowa, who did have to come back in this game. So the Hawkeyes move to 4-1.
I am not going to let you just glance over the Terrapins, though. I wanted to shout out a couple of my guys. Talia, once again, lighting it up. 352 and 5 touchdowns. If that was a stat line for Michael Penix Jr., Bo Nix, Caleb Williams, it'd be all anybody could talk about.
Okay.
And also want to shout out my guy, Ty Felton. 7 catches, 134 yards, 3 touchdowns. Love the performance there from Ty. So just shouting out my guys. I will absolutely ride on this next week. Do you know who Maryland plays? Michigan? This is their first gauntlet. They play Ohio State.
Ohio State. Okay.
So let's look out.
Ohio State's off a bye too.
I believe so.
Yep.
And this is their road one. I think they play Penn State and Michigan at home later in the year, but they do go on the road for this one. So just saying, look out. Big game.
Okay. There you go. Guys, let's go to the group of five, and we'll just kind of dot this around. If you guys have, you know, kind of notes from this, feel free to speak up. One that caught my eye, South Florida had not won on the road in 16 tries. They beat Navy today against a Power 5 opponent, in 16 tries. They were 0-16. They win 44-30 today against the Midshipmen. Navy drops to 1-3. This is actually kind of a fascinating game. I had it on CBS Sports Network at one point today. Stock up for South Florida. Byron Brown throws for 338 and 3 touchdowns. Alex Golish might be turning the culture around in Tampa.
Yeah, I think we saw a lot of that they just couldn't get the big play against Alabama. They were right there to try to upset the tide, but as the season goes on, they might be right there at the top of the American. A couple other games, if we can just keep moving it real quick. Memphis did hold on to beat Boise State 35-32. And the other big game, I think, this week was Tulane UAB, the Fighting Trent Dilfers. Close one at the half, but Tulane.
Angry Trent Dilfers.
Yeah, speaking of fighting and Trent Dilfer, I don't know if y'all saw his blow.
Yeah, where he flipped out on his assistant coaches.
I don't know what happens. Like, how do you lose your mind like that?
I think he might have a little bit of a temper tantrum. It's not a good look. Not a good look. We talked about Bowling Green winning out of the MAC. That was an impressive win for them. The Sun Belt, as usual, was just delightful this weekend. James Madison had to hold off a hard-charging comeback from South Alabama to win 31-23. Marshall and Old Dominion. Let me see if I can pull up the drive chart on that one, because that game was bonkers. Trey, please do us the honors. This is a treat.
Yeah, so this was just an absolutely insane game. Touchdown, interception, punt, field goal, punt, downs, punt, fumble, touchdown, punt, touchdown, touchdown, punt, touchdown, miss, field goal, into first half. Touchdown, interception, fumble, interception, touchdown, 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 punt, punt, downs, field goal, touchdown, punt, interception, punt, downs, end of game. Absolutely bonkers.
Woo!
Listen, Marshall got out. So this game started out ODU's favor. They were up 21-3 at one point, and then the thundering herd just came roaring back. They go from down 21-3 to up 31-21 in the blink of an eye, nearly give up the lead, And then ODU makes it really interesting, but about, when was this? The last touchdown that ODU scored, 8:21 in the fourth. Marshall's able to hold them off. And like you said, there's a couple of punts. There's an interception mixed in. Like, Marshall tried to give this game away in every conceivable fashion, and Old Dominion just would not take it. But I tell you what, the funniest thing about this game for me was that the announcers, it was like they were calling marble racing or something after, you know, like 6 months into COVID, when marble racing stopped being entertaining and kind of lost its fun. It was like that. They were just so deadpan. They called a pick six in the most normal ho-hum, oh, there he goes, kind of fashion. And I was like, guys, this is the Sun Belt. You need to be cranking monsters up there to keep us entertained with what's going on the field. Marshall's 4-0, good for the Thundering Herd. Old Dominion can't really figure out who they are this year. Georgia Southern beats Coastal Carolina. Guys, Jimmy Chadwick is sorely missed in Conway, because holy cow, that offense cannot do anything consistent. Georgia Southern's a great team, 4-1 in the Sun Belt, but boy, it's been tough to watch that offense for the Chanticleers just get evaporated.
Yeah, it's really sad to see the downfall of the Chauncey's offense. And you look over at Liberty, who hired Jamie Chadwell, and they are flying to the top of Conference USA in year one. So it's really sad. I wonder how this is affecting Grayson McCall's draft stock too, because I know he needed a big year outside of that offense. And unfortunately, it's looking like he's not getting it.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Texas State nearly blows the cover, but they do hang on to win 50-36 over Southern Miss. And App State needs a last-second walk-off field goal to beat UL Monroe 41-40. Any other notes, items, things we didn't cover before we get out of here?
Fresno State is looking really, really good. They're up 20-0 on a hapless Nevada right now. Air Force also undefeated out in the Mountain West as well. We haven't talked a ton of Mountain West football because so many of their games are on, you know, really late while we're finishing up this podcast, but a couple of really good teams out West that you need to keep an eye on for the New Year's Six race.
Speaking of that, Wyoming too.
Yeah. Wyoming 4-1, UNLV 4-1, Utah State had got a big win over UConn today, a big comeback win. Sad UConn, man. Just a rough start to the season.
Yeah.
The Huskies, another team that's just been right there and haven't been able to secure the bag yet this year.
Have to shout out Jacksonville State. Now, my parlay didn't hit because the Gamecocks of South Carolina were useless this weekend. But Jacksonville State, I thought that parlay was dead and gone. I thought the Gamecocks minus the 5.5 against a winless Sam Houston State team was on the rocks. They come back. They force overtime. And, Trey, you texted. I don't remember if it was right before the end of regulation or right as overtime was beginning. You texted me, oh, they're going to win this in overtime and hit that number, aren't they? And by golly, boy, they did exactly that.
Boy, did they.
It was a fun moment Thursday night, but yeah, didn't get the parlay. We're still in search of that first hit in the ledger 2023. All right, guys, yeoman's work tonight. Well done. Week 5 live reaction in the books. If you are new here, if you've watched this either live with us here tonight, as many of you did, or if you're watching this later on, you're listening on the podcast feed, please like and subscribe. It certainly means a lot to us, helps us continue to grow. You know where you can do that. And yeah, hit us up on Instagram, on Twitter as well, at 3TechPod. You can use that same handle as your code over at Homefield for 15% off your first order. And gentlemen, I'm excited for week 6. We talked about it. Red River Rivalry comes up. Texas A&M Alabama comes up. Maryland Ohio State comes up in week 6. Loaded slate. We'll get all that to you on Wednesday for our preview show. For Garrett Turney, for Trey Reeves, I'm Mitch Mason. Thanks so much for hanging with us. Until next time, so long, everybody.
Gracious, how about